2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Jesko. And Chet, we had another big week last week with Villanova Wildcats winning the national championship and then followed it up with a parade down Broad Street. The Flyers completely competing a pretty amazing second half of the season to make the playoffs. The Phillies are getting some solid starting pitching and, of course, the passing of Philadelphia sports legend, Mr. Ed Snyder.
Yeah, quite a week for sure, Bill. It was great to get out to the ballpark Monday, by the way, for another home opener. And, yeah, it's awesome that we get to talk about one of our Philly teams in the playoffs again, first time in 2 years for any of them.
Well, Chet, you and I have been looking forward to this show for weeks, and we have a special guest going to join us here shortly, Hall of Famer Ray Dittinger, returning to talk Eagles as well as a few other topics. And in the second half of the show, we will have CSN Washington Capitals insider Chuck Gormley joining us to talk Flyers Capitals series. So we're loaded up tonight.
Yeah, we are. I'm ready. And yeah, we do have plenty to talk about. I can't wait to see what everybody has to say about the Flyers and Capitals. The Caps, the heavy favorites, but you just never know when the NHL playoffs start.
Well, you're right. And before we get started, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our trivia question tonight, and we're going to try to get it in right about 7:27. So that's going to be a couple minutes earlier than usual, but we'll be giving away a signed color 8x10 photo of Eagles linebacker Jordan Hicks, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call in and correctly answer the trivia question. So write this number down so you have it for 7:27. It will be 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. Well, hey, Chet, while we're waiting on Ray, let's talk a little bit about the Flyers and the end of the season. Some people talking a little bit about maybe a gimme from the Penguins by not playing Sidney Crosby and Chris Letang, but the Flyers, who maybe didn't have a great opportunity to beat the Penguins, it didn't look like, came out, played extremely well, took care of their own business, won that game, came back Sunday to win that game, and hey, we're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, they put a little scare into us midweek when they, lost to Detroit and had to settle for just 1 point the next night against a lowly Toronto team. They made it exciting, just as our guest last week, Bill Meltzer, said they might. But, yeah, you can't blame the Penguins for resting their guys. They got to get ready for the playoffs and do what they have to do. The Flyers did what they had to do. And as you said, they got a little gift with both Boston and Detroit losing on Saturday. But the Flyers did beat the Penguins. And then a little added bonus, they also beat the Islanders on Sunday night. So, I think that helps them to feel a little better about themselves going into the playoffs. And it's 1-8. The Capitals did have the best record in the league. But anything can happen in the NHL playoffs. We've seen a lot of number 8 seeds beat number 1s over the years. Heck, the Kings several years ago when they won their first cup, they were an 8 seed. They snuck into the playoffs near the very end of the season. They were an 8 seed. They ended up going to the Stanley Cup Finals and winning it all. So you just never know in the NHL.
Well, and, we'll get with this, talk some more about this when we get with Chuck in the second half of the show. But, looking at the statistics for the Caps, Alexander Ovechkin has 50 goals, and he's just a scoring machine. But they have 5 other guys with 20-plus goals. This is going to be a real challenge for the Flyers defensively. And, of course, they have Braden Holtby, who had 48 wins, tying the season record for wins by a goaltender, and he sat out the last game of the year with an opportunity to set that record.
Yeah, he's a good one. He's going to be tough to beat. For me, the key is you got to minimize the mistakes. the Flyers have to do well on the power play. They have to do well if they do get any penalties as far as, you know, killing them off. But the best thing for me would be to avoid taking any stupid penalties because, as you said, the Capitals have a lot of weapons, so it's going to be tough to keep them all in check. I mean, in addition to Ovechkin, you got those 5-20-goal scorers. You got some playoff-savvy guys like Justin Williams and Mike Richards who've been there and won a cup with the Kings. So, you know, the Capitals have had a lot of shortcomings in the playoffs over the years. They've had trouble getting out of the first and second round on a lot of occasions. But this is the best team they've ever had. So it's not going to be easy for the Flyers. We know that.
No, but I think they match up well. And the Flyers are how many times have we talked about in the couple of years of our show talking about the hot team coming into the playoffs is the team that's been very successful. And I think the Flyers certainly qualify as a hot team entering the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best over the last few weeks. The Capitals, meanwhile, because they had pretty much everything clinched nearly a month ago, kind of, you know, sputtered down the stretch, which is understandable. We don't have anything to play for. They didn't finish real strongly. They didn't have to, but they got shut out three times in the last nine games. So, you know, you wonder if it might take them a little while to get things going once the playoffs do start Thursday night. And the Flyers have to keep that in mind and, you know, be ready for it and try to pounce on them right away, because if you could steal one of the first two games in Washington, that could be the difference in the series.
You bet. You bet. And, you know, one thing that really worries me, and as the playoffs go on, and we saw this down the stretch with Pittsburgh and Detroit and some of those tougher games that the Flyers had to play, they were getting out physical. They were getting out hit. They were getting beat in the corners to the puck and those sort of things. That certainly worries me as we play the Capitals, even though I think it's a good matchup. We can't get in a situation where we're getting pushed around. And the Flyers, you know, the Broad Street Bullies aren't any longer. They don't have the big fighter, and they're much more of a finesse type of hockey club. And, you know, there's still some big bangers out there, some big bodies, and I just hope that doesn't come into play as we get into this round and move further, hopefully.
Yep. And, you know, we're talking about the Flyers. They may have some extra motivation this week with the unfortunate passing of Ed Snyder. I know we were going to talk about this later on, but since we had the opportunity right here, boy, that hit me kind of hard. I knew he was in poor health, but I think back to when I was a young kid and the NHL was just bringing those six new teams into the league, and the Flyers, of course, being one of them in 1967. Ed Snyder was there then, and so he's pretty much been there my entire life. And it's just going to be weird, you know, thinking about the Flyers without Ed Snyder. He's always been there. He's been that one constant. So, you know, maybe his passing will give them a little extra motivation. But, boy, so many fond memories of seeing Ed Snyder up in the owner's box, you know, cheering and getting angry. He was known to have a little bit of a temper, but he will certainly be missed in and around the Philadelphia sports scene.
Oh, yes. And you know, I was thinking about this, too, just the other day, yesterday, I guess. And, you know, when you have a change in ownership like this, you know, who knows who's going to become the owner, if it's going to be someone in the Snyder family who's going to run operations or who that's going to be, but they're going to be different. You know, there's no doubt about that. There's going to be change, and it's going to be important for whoever that person is to allow the Flyers hockey people to do what Ed Snyder allowed them to do. So, we'll see how that goes and see who takes over the helm, you know, moving forward. And because one thing about Ed Snyder that we always knew is he was willing to spend money to win. And whatever it took to win, he was willing to do that. So let's see what happens. And obviously we have this series to go, and then we'll move forward. But, hey, enough of the Flyers talk for now. We'll get back to that here in the second half of the show. But we want to talk some Eagles, and we have that other business out of the way. So let's welcome back our Hall of Famer, Ray Dininger. Ray, welcome back to the show.
How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Well, Ray, as always, we're wanting to talk. We started out, we're talking about a little Flyers and talking about Ed Snyder and his legacy here in Philadelphia, and we certainly want to get your take on that, and then we want to talk some Eagles.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, Ray, the Philly sports scene lost a legend Monday with the passing of the Flyers owner and co-founder. Now, you knew Ed Snyder. You're quite familiar with the whole Snyder-Jerry Wolman feud about the building of the Spectrum. You know how highly he was thought of in the city and beyond. So just in general, what are your memories of Ed Snyder and what's his legacy?
Well, a lot of people don't know that he actually came to town to be associated with the Eagles. I think everybody will always associate him with the Flyers, and as they should. But he came to town with Jerry Wallman as part of the Jerry Wallman front office when Jerry bought the Eagles team in 64. And he came in as, he and Jerry were friends back from their days in D.C. And when Jerry bought the Eagles, he brought, a whole bunch of his guys with him to run the team. And Ed came in as vice president and was with the team for 64, 65, 65, I guess 3, maybe 4 years. And then Jerry Wallman wound up firing him because it came down to a conflict between Ed Snyder and the then coach and general manager, Joe Kuharik. They just, Ed Snyder and Joe Kuharik just never got along. I mean, just two very, very different people. And it got to a point after a few years where Wallman just decided that it was hurting the organization to have this internal feud, and he felt like he got to a point where he had to choose between the two. And he had locked himself into an incredible 15-year contract with Joe Kuharik. So if he had to choose between one or the other, he felt like he had to stick with Kuharik, and that was when Ed Snyder was let go and went over and took over the full operation of the Flyers and built them into one of the one of the great teams in the NHL, two-time Stanley Cup champion, and that's how he's always going to be remembered. But I remember him as a guy that just built what I thought with the Flyers was a truly first-class organization. Right from the get-go, really. I mean, they just did things the right way. I mean, they traveled well. The players, they had dress codes when other teams didn't have dress codes. Equipment was always first rate. The locker room was well maintained. Practice facilities were top notch. You went around other NHL teams, especially in the 70s, it was still pretty crude and primitive. And the Flyers, in a lot of respects, were ahead of their time in the way they did their business. And obviously, Ed, over time, took really good care of his players. I mean, some people would say to a fault that he kept guys around and kept bringing guys back and trying to maintain what he used to call the Flyer way. But, I mean, that was what he believed in. And, when they talk about the Flyers being a family, I mean, it truly was. And, that started right from the top. That started with Ed. And you see it going on now. I mean, what they've done with the Flyers Wives Carnival has been great work. What Ed has done for youth hockey in this area with the Ed Snyder Youth Hockey Foundation, remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, the man leaves behind just an incredible legacy. And on the weekend that he passes is the weekend that the Flyers get back to the playoffs. It was almost poetic.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Ray, the last time we spoke to you, I guess, was actually in November, and the Eagles season was kind of, the wheels were falling off. And so since then, Chip Kelly is out, Doug Peterson is in. How you feel about that? And how do you feel specifically about the search or lack of search or minimal search, whatever went on to hire Doug Peterson? You like him?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, there's nothing that you can, there's no real track record there that you can point to and say, yeah, this is what this guy is. This is what he's accomplished. I feel good about him running our team, or I don't feel good about him running our team. We don't know. I mean, we really don't know what kind of a head coach Doug Peterson's going to be. He has a very, very, very slim resume. It doesn't necessarily mean that he can't do the job, but all you can say right now is let's wait and see. There are other candidates out there. There are people I wish they had talked to. I would have liked to have seen them talk to Sean McDermott. They chose not to for whatever reason. I would have liked to have seen Jeff Lurie sit down and have a conversation, at least have a conversation with John Gruden and say, hey, John, do you feel like coaching again? I still feel that John Gruden's got a lot of football in him. I think he's still got a lot of fire in him. And I think if he was presented with the right opportunity, he would come back and coach again. And I'd feel more confident bringing in a John Gruden who's actually coach in this league and won a Super Bowl than taking a shot with a guy that's never coached here before. But that's the decision they chose to make. I thought it was a curious one. It certainly was a surprising one. And I know a lot of people have jumped to the conclusion that this is a terrible decision and it's going to end in failure, and it may. But, I mean, right now, to be fair, I think the only thing you can say is, well, let's see how he does. You know, I think they've made some pretty – I think they've made some good moves in the offseason. I mean, they've gotten rid of some onerous contracts. They've moved on from some players and opened up some salary cap space, and they've brought in some new guys who, you know, I think some of them can help. And now we got, you know, in just a week's time, we got, we're coming into what is going to be a very, very important draft for this team. I mean, they can't afford to whiff with the eighth pick. I mean, whoever they pick at number eight, they better be a guy that's going to step right in and play for them, because they got some holes to fill.
Well, Ray, you mentioned the draft. As we speak, we're 15 days away. So in anticipation of your visit with us, just for the heck of it, I looked at 10 different mock drafts this morning. Now, I know sometimes you can't always trust them, but somewhat surprising, 7 of those 10 mock drafts had the Eagles taking running back Ezekiel Elliott of Ohio State. Do you think that might happen, and are you okay with that pick if it plays out that way?
I'm of two minds on that one. I know what the conventional wisdom in the NFL is now about drafting running backs in the first round and drafting running backs in the top 10. You know, you just don't do it in today's NFL. The feeling is that running back, you know, there are a lot of running backs out there in every draft. Teams will generally not draft running backs high, so they tend to fall, which means that you can get a Shady McCoy in round 2. You can get a Brian Westbrook in round 3. I mean, good players, good running backs will slide, and they do every year. So most teams will just, you know, in the early rounds, they'll go for the offensive linemen, they'll go for the pass rushers, the cornerbacks, quarterbacks, but they'll wait on the running backs because, okay, round 3, yeah, I can go get myself a running back. And it's generally true. And by the way, I subscribe to that for the most part. But I think every so often a guy comes along that makes you rethink that. And I think Ezekiel Elliott is that kind of player. I think he is really good. I mean, I've talked to a lot of NFL people, and a couple of them have told me they think he is the best player in this draft.
Wow.
Pound for pound, the best player. If you're talking about the guy who's the most skilled player at his position, he's better than any of the quarterbacks. He's better than any of the receivers. He's better than anybody on the other side of the ball. That he's just pound for pound. If you're talking about who's the best football player in this draft, it's Ezekiel Elliott. And I've had, you know, not one, but two guys tell me that straight out. I don't know how to evaluate that. I don't think in those terms. But I'll say this: I think he's really good. Most of the time, if you were talking about a running back at number 8, I would say, I'm not going there. But Ezekiel Elliott is good enough that it makes me think. It makes me pause. Hmm. Now, if sitting right here right now, I had to push the button and make the call, I probably wouldn't. I probably, depending on who's on the board, but if I had a shot, let's say, at Ronnie Stanley, the tackle from Notre Dame, which I think they may. I would take Ronnie Stanley. Now, if he's gone and Elliott's still there, I might rethink it. You know, but if I had a shot at a guy that has a chance to be, you know, a 10-12 year fixture on your offensive line, and I think Ronnie Stanley has that kind of ability, I would probably take the safer option and take him. And then in round 3, then I would start looking for a running back, because I do think when I look at this running back crop, I think you're probably going to get a couple of guys that are going to be sitting there in round 3, maybe even round 4, that are good enough that they could come in and play for you. But I really like Ezekiel Elliott a lot. I think he's whoever gets him, and somebody's going to get him. He's not going to get out of the first 10, I don't think. And whoever gets him, I think, is going to get a guy who's going to be a really good player.
Well, they signed Sam Bradford for a couple of years, and to me, that's kind of a lukewarm signing if you're only going to bring him in for a couple of years. If you're sitting there at 8 and you have a chance to get Wentz or Lynch or one of those guys, do you have to take him at that point if he's on the board?
The quarterback, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, Wentz, Goff,
or
Lynch.
I wouldn't touch Lynch at eight. If it's Goff or Wentz, I would think about it, but not Lynch. I don't like Lynch very much. I think he's way far away from being ready to play in the NFL. And you know, if he's going to play, it's way down the road. And I don't know. Maybe he won't even reach that point. But I've seen him play a couple of games. I saw him play against. I'd heard a lot about him. So when they played Temple, I thought, okay, I want to check this guy out because people were telling me, oh, first round draft pick could be the first quarterback to go in a draft. I thought, okay, let me see. And I was unimpressed is putting it mildly. And I thought, well, you know, okay, that's maybe just had a bad day. And then I saw him in their bowl game against Auburn, and he was awful. I mean he wasn't just so. I mean, he was awful. I mean, if you go back and you look at the tape of him in the game against Auburn, and I'll admit Auburn's a really good team, but you look at him in that game. I mean, you wouldn't even invite this guy to training camp based on if that's the tape you popped in. So he's probably just because teams need quarterbacks and there are going to be some teams looking for quarterbacks and he's 6 feet seven and he's got a strong arm and yada, yada, yada. And he's going to probably go in the first round, but I sure wouldn't touch him in the first round. And I wouldn't even think about him at eight. The other two guys, you know, I think Wentz, everybody is really loves Wentz. Even the teams that don't need a quarterback, when they've interviewed the guy, watched him work out, I mean, they all walk away saying, wow, this guy's really good. So he's going to go right at the top. I mean, he's going to go top, you know, he'll probably go with two, maybe three. He certainly won't get past Dallas at four. I mean, I think he's going to be the number one quarterback, and I think he's going to go fast. And Goff, people are a little bit mixed on him. I mean, some teams like him better than others. But just the fact that I think that it's those two quarterbacks and then a big drop-off, Goff is probably going to go in the top seven. He may be Chip Kelly's pick at seven.
Yeah.
For San Francisco. That could very well happen. But I don't really expect either of those two guys, certainly not Wentz, and probably not Goff, to be there for the Eagles at eight. And, you know, Lynch will be. And who knows? I mean, they may have a totally different opinion of Lynch than I do. I mean, they may, you know, it's up to anybody's personal opinion. I mean, there were people when Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf came out in the draft that liked Ryan Leaf and didn't like Peyton Manning. So
right.
it all depends on how you're, you know, what you're looking for and how you watch the tape. And who knows, you know, Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson may have looked at Paxton Lynch and said, wow, this guy's really good. And they may pick him. I wouldn't. I just think if you're talking, I think he's a reach in the first round at any point, you know, all the way down to 32. And I think he would just be an enormous reach at number eight.
What about in the third round if you go for a quarterback there? Do you like a Kevin Hogan or a Christian Hackenberg?
I'm not a big Hackenberg guy. The quarterback that I like out of that next tier of quarterbacks is Dak Prescott. I like him from Mississippi State. He's played a lot. He's got a lot of experience. I just like the way he plays. I like his aggressiveness. He's got a very strong arm. His accuracy needs work. I mean, he needs to be more accurate. But he's a tough kid who doesn't turn the ball over much, and has won a lot of games. And for teams where I don't think his talent, the talent level around him is very good. I mean, whatever that team has accomplished, it's generally accomplished purely with him, both as a runner and a passer. I think he's a guy that needs a little development time and he needs some coaching. There are certainly some rough edges to his game, but I think there's an awful lot there. I mean, there are some guys in that next grouping that you would think about. But he's the one that stands out to me. I think he's got a chance to. I mean, the comparison you make is there are times when you watch him, and he puts you in mind of Russell Wilson. He's got a little bit of Russell Wilson to his game. I mean, it's not a straight-up comparison. They're not exactly the same, but similar in some ways. And I think he's a guy that if you bring him in and you coach him and you have a little patience with him, that he could be a pretty good quarterback down the road.
Hey, Ray, I'm going to go against conventional wisdom, I think, because I'm thinking they're going defense. I'm thinking if Vernon Hargraves is on the board or maybe even a Miles Jack kind of guy, I think they made enough moves in the offseason, and almost all of them were on the offensive side of the ball. I'm thinking they're set up to draft defense.
Could be. I mean, a lot depends on just who's there. You know, if all the quarterbacks are gone and Elliott is gone and you know, Stanley and Tunsil, the two tackles are gone. You know, maybe the head and shoulders, the best player on your board, if you're going to go by your board, if you're going to trust your board, which is what Howie said they want to do. You know, they grade all these guys and they have them grouped by grades, and they don't want to go straying too far off of that to go reaching for a guy here or reaching for a guy there. So if you trust your board, well, depending on what happens above you, all of a sudden, you know, the number one guy on your board very well may be a defensive player. I mean, that's not impossible, depending on how things play out. But if I were to guess, I'm guessing it would be more likely they would go offense, but it could be a defensive guy. If the right guy is sitting there, listen, if Joey Bosa somehow gets to 8, I don't think he will, but if he were, I mean, I don't know how you'd pass on him. I think he's going to come into this league and be really, really good. I mean, there's some people that are trying to compare him to J.J. Watt. I don't think he's going to be that. But I could very easily see him being a Jared Allen kind of guy. I mean, in fact, when I watch him play, his size, his technique, I almost think he must have studied Jared Allen, because a lot of his moves, the way he uses his hands, when you watch him play a lot of games, it looks, I mean, you can swear you're watching Jared Allen. And I think if he can stay healthy, I think he could have that kind of career. And that kind of career is pretty good.
Yeah,
hey, Ray, one
sure.
Final question. We have less than a minute left. What's going on with Fletcher Cox? Are they going to get a deal done, or might they use him as trade bait and, you know, move up to number two or number one in the draft?
I don't see that. I really don't see that. You know, his contract, he's got another year in his contract, so it's not like this has to happen. It's not like we're at the 11th hour with him. I mean, they would love to get a deal done, but I don't think so. I mean, just conversations I've had with Howie Roseman mostly, I mean, any conversation about the future of this team begins with Fletcher Cox. I mean, he's your best player, and it's not even close for number two. So, it's you guys like that just don't come along every day. When you got them, you don't move them. I think that they might be haggling a little bit over money, and they probably are, but I don't see any way they're going to make a deal and move on from him. I mean, if they did, I would be shocked, and if they did, I think it would be a mistake. I mean, I just think they have to work out the dollars, and they can work out the dollars because they got them. And when you got a player of that kind of ability, you build around that kind of player. You don't move them.
I agree.
Absolutely. Well, Ray, time has flown by already, and as always, great insights on where the birds are going and on Philly sports. And we certainly appreciate you always taking time out to join us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Always enjoy talking to you guys.
Great. Thanks,
okay.
Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
Take care, fellas. See you. Bye-bye.
All right, Chad. Well, hey, it's trivia time. And as we mentioned, we'll be giving away a signed color 8x10 photo of Eagles linebacker Jordan Hicks, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call in and correctly answer this trivia question. So here we go. The late Flyers owner Ed Snyder was an entrepreneur at a young age, with his first partnership coming with a company named Edge Limited. What type of business was Edge Limited? How about that one, Chet? If did you know that one before? Do you know that answer?
Well, I do know it because I read a lot over the last few days about Mr. Snyder. So otherwise, I would not have known it. But I know from what I've read over the last few days, and maybe our listeners will know it also from that.
Well, and that's really where I got the question from, because I must have read it 100 times myself. So our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2877. 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. Well, Chet, let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Hey, Chet, one thing I wanted to get to while we're waiting on our next guest, Mr. Chuck Gormley, to join us. I wanted to remind you that today marks the date of the passing of our man, High Hopes Harry Callis.
Yes, 7 years already. Time sure flies. And, you know, we love T-Mac, but we miss Harry, that's for sure. He was Phillies baseball when you talk about, you know, listening and watching the games. It was just so great to hear Harry for 30-plus years.
Yes, it was. And, you know, it's funny how these things get brought up every year, and the years just keep on clicking by. And, gee whiz, we certainly hope that, you know, we get to enjoy more times. And every time you hear his voice, you know, people put out these little video clips and things. I actually posted one here a couple of days ago, and it's just great to hear his voice. And how many people respond by saying, boy, it still gives me chills.
Yep. You never get tired of hearing Harry the K.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to talk a little Flyers. I believe Chuck has joined us. You with us, Chuck?
I am with you.
All right. Well, hey, we want to welcome CSN Washington Caps insider Chuck Gormley to his first appearance on the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable. And before we get after Chuck for being with the Capitals, because it's always fun to pick on that, I have to go, you know, full cycle and say Chuck is a local guy that grew up just a few blocks from me in Collingdale, Pennsylvania. So he's even written a book, a Flyers book, titled Orange, Black, and Blue, The Greatest Philadelphia Flyers Stories Never Told. So, Chuck, welcome. Even though you're wearing a Capitals hat this week, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. There aren't many of us from Collingdale that can still claim that. I mean, geez, we're few and far between.
You bet. And I do have to say that Chuck is a few, maybe more than a few years younger than me. So he's a lucky guy.
Hey, Chuck.
I've been covering hockey
Chuck,
for a
this
long
is,
time now.
This is Chet, Chuck. The Caps had a terrific season, but they have a lot of playoff disappointments on their resume. I think in the Ovechkin era, they've lost 7 of the 11 playoff series they've been in, many of those going 7 games, and they haven't gotten past the second round. Now, are they a more confident bunch now that they had the best record in the league this year, and are they ready to make a deep run this playoff season, do you think?
Well, they think so, and I think so, too. I think when you add guys like Justin Williams and TJ Oshie and Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen, those are all guys that have been deep in the playoffs. And I think that is a big reason I think the Caps can go deeper. They seem to be a team on a mission, and then they kind of went into cruise control the last maybe 3 or 4 weeks of the season when they clinched everything. So I see all the pieces here. I think this could be a good series. It could be a really physical. In fact, I know it'll be a very physical series. But, I think the Caps have what they need to get deep into the playoffs. And I don't normally pick a team that I'm covering to win the Stanley Cup because I just simply didn't think many teams that I've covered could win the Stanley Cup. But this is one of them. I do think that this team, you know, if things go right and the Flyers don't get them off their game and send them to the penalty box a lot, I think this will be a fairly quick series, honestly.
Okay.
Well, you know, we were talking a little earlier early in the show about Ovechkin and his 50 goals and 5 other 20 goal scorers. Of course, we have our pals Justin Williams and Mike Richards, and Holtby with his 48-9-7 record is pretty impressive. Sure. I think, you know, we were talking about the Flyers, and I think the most important thing, which is pretty, I mean, it's not rocket science, is you have to stay out of the penalty box.
Well, and you have to get great goaltending. There are a few things I was just talking with my son about this, and you know, I think that there are three ways the Flyers can win the series. One is they need to stay out of the box, like you said, and they need to get the Capitals to get into the penalty box. I mean, they faced each other four times this year, and the Flyers had 17 power plays. So that is something they need to continue to do, and they need to convert on the power play. Another thing is they're going to need to be able to stop Alex Ovechkin, not only at even strength, but especially on the power play. And that can be done. Last year in the playoffs, when the Capitals got knocked out by the New York Rangers, they didn't score a power play goal in the final six games of that series. So that can be done. It requires a lot of shot blocking, willingness to get in front of Ovi, and that's not an always easy thing to do because the guy shoots a 100-mile-an-hour slap shot. But if you can do that, and you can maybe create a little disturbance in front of Braden Holtby. And I'll tell you what, the Capitals' third defense pairing is a little shaky. Neither of those two guys, Dmitry Orlov and Nate Schmidt, have been in the playoff series. This will be their first. And you could probably say the same about any team in the NHL, but if you go after that third defense pairing and you're able to get your top line out against their third defense pairing, I think that's the key. And I think you'll see a lot of that matchup in Philly when you have the last change.
Hey, Chuck, as you mentioned, the Caps have been pretty much on cruise control the last month because they had everything clinched. The Flyers, meanwhile, have played almost every game like a playoff game because they were, you know, just trying to get into the dance. And now you have the passing of Ed Snyder that they're going to use as a motivational factor. Do you think, you know, sometimes that can get into the Capitals' heads, the fact that, you know, they haven't really had to win a game in the last month?
Yeah, I think it's a factor. I think it's definitely a factor. People talk about that proverbial switch, and players don't want to say it, but, you know, they haven't. Alex Ovechkin in particular kind of you could see that the passion wasn't there because everything was locked up on March 15th. So I think, you know, the Flyers have a lot going for them. They were 15-5-3 down the stretch. One of those wins was a big shootout win against the Capitals. I see the Flyers being dangerous for a couple reasons. I guess if you're a Capitals fan, you don't want to see the Capitals split these first two home games because then you're looking at two really difficult games in Philadelphia. And if you're a Flyers fan, you want exactly that. I think if the Flyers can split in D.C., it's going to be a long series. And that's what I do sense that Ed Snyder passing is going to create a game three that we've never seen before. The most intense I've ever seen that building was game seven against the Devils. And that was in the I'm going to try to date myself here. I think it's the 2000 conference finals, and Lauren Hart was singing and the place was just rocking. And then we all know that Scott Stevens hit Eric Lindros and you could hear a pin drop. And, that's where, you know, but if that had not happened, I had no doubt that the Flyers would win that game. And it did happen. And we all saw what, you know, that kind of changed the course of Flyers history for quite a few years. But, you know, that energy in that building, I talked to Mike Richards about this yesterday. He said, you know, I'll take Chicago, but I'll take Philly over Chicago any day. He said Chicago's awesome with the national anthem, but he said Lauren Hart singing God Bless America with Kate Smith, he said you can't beat that. And, you know, yeah. He knows. He's been there. You guys have been there.
Right. Wait, Chuck, one of the things I think that plays in my mind a little bit to the Flyers' advantage is the fact that, you know, as we mentioned, they're hot going into the playoffs, but I think the contributions they got from everybody – down the stretch, that fourth line has been fantastic for them in their roles, and I think everybody has kind of filled into their spots. And to me, that's what's really helped them. And of course, Wayne Simmonds got crazy hot there in the last week, but overall, it seems like a total team contribution.
Yeah, I think Wayne Simmonds is the heartbeat of that team. You know, between him and Claude Giroux, those two guys have been tremendous. And I think that Jake Voracek, if he can get his game in gear, that top line is going to be really difficult to beat. In fact, when I was talking with Braden Holtby about that top line, he said he thinks that Claude Giroux and Wayne Simmonds are the best at Simmonds getting in front of the net for deflections and Claude Giroux finding him. He says he doesn't know any tandem that can do that the way those two guys do. And Wayne Simmonds can get in inside a goalie's mask by just being in that crease and making defensemen move him out. And aside from Brooks Orpik, who did it for a long time in Pittsburgh, the Capitals don't have that big, strong physical defenseman who's going to move Wayne Simmonds out of there. But you're right, that fourth line, I love Ryan White. I love the way he plays. I'm sure the fans love him there too. But, you know, if you look top to bottom, the Flyers have a shot in this series because they can play that gritty, gritty game, and that's what we saw down the stretch, and that's what we saw the last time these two teams met. There's not a lot of love between these two teams, and we'll see. I mean, to me, a lot depends on how this series is called. If the referees are tight, then you're going to see the Capitals still into the penalty box. And if that happens, it's an even series.
Hey, Chuck, Ovechkin is 30 years old now, very much his prime, as the 50-goal season would tell you. How has his game changed over the last 10 years?
Well, I think the last 2 years, we've really seen it change. You know, 2 years ago under Adam Oates, he was a minus 35. I mean, he was still scoring a ton of goals, but his overall game had really taken a downturn, and he was really becoming the scorn of the media. You know, the Canadian media was all over him, and I think that he kind of almost needed to hit that. He had to understand that his job is to score goals, but there's more to hockey than that. And when I talk to a lot of other people around the league, they compare him a lot to Steve Yzerman, and that Yzerman was one of those guys. Mike Modano was one of those guys who could score goals, but they had to reach a point in their careers where their coach, and in Modano's case, it was Ken Hitchcock, and in Yzerman's case, it was Scotty Bowman. The coaches said, hey, there's more to your game than scoring goals, and I think that's what Barry Trotz has been for Alex Ovechkin. I think he demanded that he play both sides of the ice, and you see him back checking now like he never did before. And I think that not only helps the team win, but it gains credibility in the locker room with your teammates. And I definitely see a different player now. He's less about scoring goals and more about winning games. Although he was at 47 goals with two games to play, and he said, you know what, I'm going to give myself a hat trick and take the last game off.
Nice, nice. Well, hey, Chuck, one final question for you, and backing up just a little bit. We mentioned the Flyers book you wrote titled Orange, Black, and Blue, The Greatest Philadelphia Flyers Stories Never Told. Tell us a little bit about that, and how old is the book, and can you still get a hold of it? Sounds like an interesting title.
It was a lot of fun to write. It came out in 2009. I'm sure that you could probably find it on Amazon. It's harder to find these days, but I just secured one of the last copies, and I'm using it as a playoff reference right now. But it was a lot of fun. Whenever you can go back in time and talk to some of the Broad Street Bullies, Don Selesky, Bob Kelly, Bob Clark, you know, just named Bill Flett. I mean, there were so many guys, Peter Zezel, you know, just so many guys that I had talked to over the years for that book. It was just so much fun to write because, like you mentioned, I grew up a Flyers fan, and to meet these guys and to be able to cover them for 23 years was a treat for me. And to be able to talk to those guys and let them tell those stories, there are several stories in that book that, like the title, that they've never been told. And I concentrate a lot on the Lindros era because that, I think, fans really didn't get enough of. They didn't get enough of the behind-the-scenes stories behind that. Keith Jones tells a great story about how Eric Lindros took a hit in a game in Nashville, and he was there lying in the tub in the middle of the night, and Keith Jones came in and was like, you don't look good. We need to get you to a hospital. And as fate would have it, he probably saved his life. I mean, he had a collapsed lung, and it was just an amazing, like, to me, that was an amazing time in Flyers history. And to be able to cover that whole year was amazing. That whole 1999, 2000, 2001, those seasons were just incredible because there's so much promise for that team, and there was so much going on with so many other things around the team and off the ice. But I really enjoyed writing it. And you know, it's great for me now because I can take a look back at some stories. Like the last time these two teams met in 2008, was that great overtime game in Game 7 when Joffrey Lupo scored a goal to send the Caps packing. And, you know, I don't think many people know this, but Joffrey Lupo told me that he broke his stick on that play just before scoring the goal. But instead of just tossing his stick, he kept it in his hand, he scored the goal, and then he tossed it in the air. But, yeah, so many great stories over the years, and I've really enjoyed covering the Flyers and the Capitals now. 5 years with the Caps, 23 years with the Flyers, and it's been a lot of fun.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, you know, I found out about your book through our buddy Carl Henderson at Carl's Cards up there in Havertown. He works with us on our show and sponsors our trivia question and all that. And I know Carl has a few of those books still in his store signed by you, Chuck, that are for
sale.
So if there's a listener out there, run on over to Carl, right? There you go. There you go. And ask for Chuck's book, and you'll get an autographed copy.
There you go. And I stopped by Carl's first book signing one day, and it was he does a great job there. Has a lot of athletes come in. He's got quite a bit over there.
Yes, he does. Great store. I call it the Philadelphia Sports Candy Store. You can't go in there without having something.
You're right.
All right, Chuck. Well, hey, we appreciate you joining us. Great insight on the Caps stuff. We personally, you know, we can't ever get to see up here, and you got your eye right on it. And we certainly appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Have a great night.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right, go Flyers, Chuck.
That's right. Everybody's asking me who I'm rooting for. I'm claiming innocence on that one.
There you go. There you go. All right, Chuck. Thanks. Okay, Chet, let's get our trivia question back out there because we couldn't answer it while we were talking to Chuck anyway. So let's run it back out real quick. This is a pretty easy one. So the late Flyers owner, Ed Snyder, was an entrepreneur at a young age with his first partnership coming with a company named Edge Limited. What type of business was Edge Limited? It's in just about every article that you would have seen this week about Ed Snyder. So, again, the shopforkisses.org phone line to answer that question, 929-477-2855. All right, Chuck. Hey, Chet, I wanted to go right back real quick and kind of review real fast what Ray said and what Chuck said. And you have any thoughts, anything strike you particularly?
Not really. He laid it out there, just what we were saying. The Flyers have to minimize mistakes. They have to, you know, stay out of the penalty box. And if they get their own power play opportunities, they got to cash in. Because, I mean, let's face it, the Capitals have more talent. Look at the numbers. That'll tell you right there. They have the better goaltender. They have, you know, more experience, I guess, at this point. It's not going to be easy. We know that. The Flyers have to do pretty much everything right. They have to play a near-perfect series. But, you know, there's the Ed Snyder factor, and there's the Capitals' history of, you know, not faring well in the playoffs over the last 10 years. So we'll see. I think it's going to be an interesting series. I don't think it's going to be a quick series like Chuck thought it might be. I think it's going to go more than five games. I think it's going to go six, maybe even seven.
Well, I hope you're right. And I just, I'm a little, as I said at the top of the show, I'm a little worried about the physical aspect of the game. Chuck turns right around and says he thinks it's going to be a physical series. And I don't know that plays to the Flyers, but we'll see. We'll see. There's never been a Flyers team in many, many years that's backed down from anything. And I don't think they'll back down now, but I just hope they have enough horses to get in the corners and grind this thing out. And boy, I do love that fourth line. Those guys are tough.
I hear you. I agree.
All right. Well, hey, I did want to talk a little bit about next week's show, Chet. We're having Eagles draft guru Fran Duffy joining us for the third straight year. As we know, we're posting a lot of videos and things that Fran has done, breaking down the different players in the draft. And what we're going to do next week is we are going to have Fran for basically the entire show, 45 or 50 minutes. It's going to be a draft show. Unless there's something specific that happens, maybe a national championship or something like that, we're going to try to stick to the Eagles draft next week. We're going to have our phone lines open, excuse me, so people can call in, ask Fran some quick questions and get some insight on certain players. So be sure to join us next Wednesday night, April 20th at 7 p.m., and we're going all out Eagles draft, Chet.
Yeah, we're going to get you all set for the draft with Fran Duffy next week. But then if that's not enough for you, on the 27th, which is draft night eve, we'll have another one of our favorite Eagle experts back, Bleeding Green Nation editor Brandon Lee Gowton. So you're going to be all ready for the draft after these next couple of Wednesdays.
You bet. And, you know, I did – the one thing I really did find interesting from Ray was the Paxton Lynch. Funny how his view is very down, thumbs very down on Paxton Lynch.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that. Matter of fact, I heard Elliot Shore Parks say that he likes Lynch a lot and he would be okay with the Eagles taking him at number 8. He says Lynch isn't ready right now, which is what Ray said also, but he thinks Lynch has a very big upside. So, you know, you never know. I don't think they would take him at 8. I think Lynch is more of a late first-round guy, but Elliot was pretty high on Paxton Lynch, so you just never know. I don't know how the Eagles are thinking. They've had all of those quarterbacks in along with Kevin Hogan and Christian Hackenberg, so they're keeping things pretty close to the vest, so I don't know what they're going to do.
Well, and his other comment, interesting, is that Wentz won't make it past the Cowboys. And, you know, if he's as good as advertised, that's not where we want him to end up.
Yeah, I agree. Wentz is going to go in the first 4. I just hope it's not to Dallas.
Yeah, and you know, the whole Ezekiel Elliott thing is, I mean, he is really getting some high marks around the league, but Derrick Henry's a pretty good football player and can play in what we think is going to be Doug Peterson's Andy Reid West Coast offense what we think we're going to see. Derrick Henry would look pretty good back there too.
Yeah, he would. But the Elliott thing kind of makes sense, especially when you consider that, you know, Murray's gone. Matthews has apparently been on the trade block and is also a guy who's got an injury history. So if you can get a stud running back for this offense, it would make sense. So I'm not surprised that 70% of the mock drafts that I looked at had the Eagles taking Ezekiel Elliott at number 8.
We will find out shortly.
Yep.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what Fran has to say and how he thinks they're going after that number 8 pick. And, you know, when you don't have a second round, that number 8 sure is important, and, you know, important in any year, but especially when you don't have a second rounder.
Oh, it's crucial to the near-term future of this franchise, let's face it.
You bet. Well, hey, let's get to our signing update at Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And, you know, we've been telling you that Carl was scheduled to have the first Flyers captain Lou Angotti in the store this Saturday, April 16th. However, Lou is having some health issues, and he is in the hospital. So we hope he gets well soon, and obviously he can't be in Havertown, Pennsylvania this week. But as soon as he's well, Carl's going to work on getting Lou back down here to do the signing. So I know Carl's taking care of the business side of that. And if you had tickets, just give Carl a call and he'll fix you up on that. One of my all-time favorites, Monsignor Bonner graduate and Penn State Heisman Trophy winner John Cappelletti is going to be in the store next Saturday, April 23rd. Ian Chet will be there, and I'm going to try, but I think the grandbaby is going to outdo Cappy on this one. We'll see what happens.
I'll say hello to Cappy for you.
There you go. And now Carl has added a couple new signings as well. Former Flyers Doug Crossman and Ed Boxcar Hospodar, one of my favorite nicknames of all time, Chet, will be in a store on May the 7th. And author Rich Westcott and 1956 NBA champion Ernie Beck will be in a store on May 14th. NHL Hall of Famers Mark Howe and his brother Marty will be in a store May the 21st. And the Father's Day treat, Brian Dawkins, will be in the house on Saturday, June the 19th. Stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, Pennsylvania, or give him a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit his website at carlscards.com or contact him on Twitter at Carl's Cards.
Hey, Bill, let me throw one more signing out there, courtesy our pal Swit. One of the legendary Broad Street Bullies, Dave the Hammer Schultz, will be signing at the Sports Card and Collectibles Show this Saturday at the Chamonix Mall. That is from 1 to 2 p.m. So, yeah, Hammer time this Saturday at the Chamonix Mall.
Very good. All right, Jet. Man, this time has flown by. Parting shot for you this week?
Mm-hmm. On this Wednesday night, Bill, another NBA season draws to a close with several interesting storylines. There's Lower Merion's Kobe Bryant playing his final game of his illustrious 20-year career, all with the Lakers, that saw him win 5 NBA titles, earn 18 All-Star selections, and finish with the third most points of all time. Never mind that it comes in the worst season in Lakers franchise history tonight. Farewell, Kobe. You have our 76ers ending year 3 of the tank with a 10 or 11 win season. 10 wins would be the second worst of all time. They, of course, already own the worst record of all time back in 72-73. I suppose a 10 or 11 win season would be a success in the mind of assets-hungry departed GM Sam Hinkie. And you have the Golden State Warriors heading into the final game of the season against visiting Memphis with a record of 72-9, which means a win would allow them to eclipse the current all-time best record of 72-10 set by the 95-96 Chicago Bulls. There's been a lot of debate this month about which team is better. The Bulls had Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Luke Longley, Ron Harper, that guy named Michael Jordan, and off the bench, Tony Kukoc. These Warriors have Draymond Green, Harrison Barnes, Andrew Bogut, and that killer backcourt of Klay Thompson and reigning MVP Steph Curry, with our pal Andre Iguodala as sixth man. For now, I've got to give the 96 Bulls the clear edge. After all, that season ended with Jordan and company winning his fourth of 6 NBA titles in an 8-year span. The Warriors right now are seeking a second straight crown. So, yeah, the Bulls for now, but we could revisit that discussion in a couple of years, I guess.
Well, Mike Parting Shot is more of a story, Chet, and it involves Mr. Ed Snyder. And I have to tell you, sometime around 1965, 6, 7, in that range, my father worked for Abbott's Dairies. If you remember them, they used to deliver milk to your houses. And my father delivered milk to Mr. Ed Snyder's house back in the day when Mr. Snyder was with the Eagles. My Christmas present, or a Christmas present, came to my house for about 3 straight years as I was a kid while he was with the Eagles. And they came from Mr. Snyder. And I still have to this day, I believe I got in 1966, it is a rug, like a throw rug, that was shaped like a football with a square in it, rectangle in it, that says Eagles. Still have it to this day. Sitting here in my press box office as I look up, I have a set of glasses. It was put out when the Flyers went into business. It's a set of glasses that has 6 glasses of the expansion 6, and then it has 6 smaller glasses of the original 6. Never been drank out of. The California Golden Seals, the Los Angeles Kings, and those teams. Gifts from Mr. Snyder to my dad back then. The first Eagles games we ever went to back, or I ever went to back at Franklin Field, that led to my Bob Brown story that I've shared before, were tickets that came from Ed Snyder through his chauffeur to my dad, to me, as a 6, 5, 6, 7 year old kid standing in the end zone at Franklin Field watching Eagles. So, my mom and dad were sports nuts, but Ed Snyder played a part in a lot of what went on in a little kid's life, and who would have ever thought about it 50 years later. But that's my Ed Snyder story, and I think it's a pretty cool one.
Yeah, that's a good story. Wow.
All right. Okay, Chet, we're at the top of the hour, and let's thank our special guest, Hall of Famer Ray Dittinger and CNN Capital insider Chuck Armley, for joining us. Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes. Our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chachesco, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, April the 20th at 7 p.m. with Eagles scouting guru Fran Duffy joining us. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes for Philadelphia sports fans.
Good hockey.